Thank you. My name's Paul, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm glad to be here tonight. I don't know if I really am or not, but I'd like to thank the committee for this opportunity, to be here tonight. And my wife Kim is here. Thank you, Kim, for coming. And I got a couple characters that, one of them a character for sure that we go back so far that we don't even remember where we met. And then another fellow in the back of the room who was an old timer when I came in. He had 9 months, and so, but here we are. We're still sober after a lot of years. So, it's a blessing to be here. I see a lot of familiar faces, and thank you to those of you who have heard me before that came back, tonight. I heard someone say that the committee made a poor selection or could have made a better one, but I'm glad to be here tonight. I'm grateful to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. It changed my life, and for me, I started drinking when I was young, and the thing that happened was I met these characters, the kids. I didn't really fit in too well in the neighborhood. I didn't fit in at school. I did not like school. And I got to be about in the sixth grade, and I started hanging out with the kids in the park. And that seems like that was my crowd. And one of these kids had stole a quart of Biltmore bourbon from his dad, and he drank half of it, and he sold me the other half for 50 cents. And that was a good buy, for me at the time. But so here's how and I had drank before that. My parents were drinkers, and they had parties, and I remember sipping, and I remember stealing a beer here and there and having a slug out of the whiskey bottle here and there. But this time I went out deliberately to get drunk, and it was early morning. It was in the summertime. I was 13, just before I turned 14, and I'd mowed the front lawn and the back lawn. And I got that half a quart of Biltmore bourbon, and I sat in the backyard by myself, and I drank it out of the bottle. And smoked a couple cigarettes, too. And I left a little bit in the bottom, just in case it didn't do the job. And I stood up, and it was working fine. I stumbled down the street, and I was not real social up until that point, but all of a sudden I decided to go visiting. And with some, I wanted to see some of these characters that hung out in the park, right? So I go over there, and I don't remember a lot other than being asked to leave, and I, after a short visit. And then I remember walking down an alley and being confronted. There was a car there, and this lady was talking to me, and it's like, that's about all I remember about that. And then I remember throwing up, walking across the tennis court at the school where I had gone to elementary school, and the custodian saying something to me. And then that's about all I remember, except for, I was good and sick, and I passed out, and obviously, I had blacked out, and I woke up, and I didn't feel so hot, but man, oh, man, I suppose if I was normal, I would have said, that alcohol, that's not good stuff, better not do that, but I really liked the effect that the alcohol produced, and I drank it just about every opportunity from there until just before I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I found out later that the lady that stopped me in the alley, her daughter was in the car, and come to find out, she was in with the cool crowd, and so here I show up. This was in Southern California, so this was Monrovia High School. I show up as a freshman, and the cool kids are already talking about me, the drunk, so it was like I was in with the in crowd all of a sudden. And one of these guys from the park, his dad was actually a detective, and he worked the racetracks. And he said it was all right if we drank at his house as long as we didn't go outside. And so he bought us beer, and we smoked cigarettes, and that's the way my drinking career started, right there on the weekends, And then it progressed a little bit. I had been in some other trouble. My parents bought a beach house in San Clemente, and started drinking down there with that crowd. And I got a job working on the fishing boats in San Clemente and was still living in Monrovia. And my parents, transported me back and forth, and I had the summers pretty much on my own in San Clemente while my parents were working up in L.A. They did have some babysitters for me, you know, but I crawled out the bathroom window at night. And, I there was so much stuff in my drinking career that, kids probably shouldn't have been doing, like going to Tijuana when you're 14 and 15, just crazy stuff. I got a job working in the tackle shop. Vietnam was going at that time. This is when the fishing boats went off the San Clemente Pier. And this one guy was, he was a gunnery sergeant, and he was being deployed to Vietnam. And the guy that owned the tackle shop asked me if I wanted a job. And so I worked at that tackle shop all through high school. And that man and his wife were my boss, and they put up a lot of my shenanigans, but I didn't lose the job. It came close a couple times. My boss was a drinker, and all of a sudden, he had a pancreatic attack, and the doctors told him that you better quit drinking or you're going to die, and he quit drinking. And so all of a sudden, I show up in the morning, and he accuses me of drinking. I haven't been drinking, and I hadn't been. But what he was smelling was, the leftover from the night before. It was 5-6 hours, whatever that was. And I was a young guy. I don't even think I was driving at that time. But my mind, I said, you know what? If he thinks I'm drinking in the morning, I might as well drink in the morning. And I didn't drink every morning, but there was times where there'd be a beer left in the car. Sometimes, not always, but I'd drink a beer on the way to work in the morning, and I had to be to work at 4:45 in the morning, and they're, high school kids, so that's just the way that I drank. And I had other situations in my life that should have told me. I mean, I started getting arrested for minor in possession when I was, 15, I think, and I never thought that alcohol was my problem, that it ever had anything to do with that. I just kept on drinking at every opportunity. I was shy and introverted, but when I was under the influence of alcohol, it gave me a false courage, And then you got into drinking with guys that were older, and I didn't want anybody to call me a lightweight. There's just something about that, the pride or the ego or something. And so I was always taking the challenge to drink just a little bit more. And I did. I was suspended for being drunk on the campus at high school, and I turned over a couple cars, and I got two drunk drivings right out of high school. And it just didn't seem to faze me too much. It was just I was a victim of circumstances, or I was in the wrong place, or that cop shouldn't have been there, or whatever. That last one in Dana Point, that was the first time I drove drunk after my first drunk driving, which was September 1970. I get in the car on December 23rd, 1970, and I take off with my buddy Bruce, who wants to go to this gal's house that lives on Santa Clara, and I wasn't too sure where we were going, and he wasn't either. And I drove down the street, and then he said, oh, no, I think it's the other side. So I put the car in reverse, and I kept going down just backing up. And I thought, oh, no, I'm in the wrong lane. So I pulled over in the other lane, so the car's going in the right direction. I drove right past two Orange County sheriff's deputies. So there was my second one. Woke up in Orange County Main Jail on Christmas Eve. And gosh, if any of you haven't been to Orange County Main Jail, any of those big places, it was something. I was a pretty scared kid, but not scared enough to quit drinking. So The boats moved to Dana Point Harbor. I was just, that's one of those things you talk about acceptance, you know, being the key. Well, I did not accept that very well because I would still be working on that pier, I think, you know, if I could have, and with the boats and the, everything that was going on. And my drinking, I was starting to get a reputation. So after that first drunk driving, I remember, you know, some of the local kids around the pier saying, jailbird, jailbird, jailbird. You know, and it was kind of embarrassing to do that. And then after the second drunk driving, people were starting to call me, you know, Drunken Paul. And one guy came up to me, says, Foster, you ought to be shot. And then, you know, just things like that. But my close friends, instead of calling me Drunken Paul, they called me DP. And then San Clemente is the little, you know, the Spanish village by the sea. And then they were calling me the village alcoholic. And, you know, that really didn't slow me down that much, just really didn't think about it. So the guy that had the hamburger stand on the street, he was a lot smarter than I was at that time, and he was selling the business, the hamburger stand, and moving to Oregon. And so I had an opportunity to buy that hamburger stand, and I'll tell you what, being self-employed at 19 years old is a good occupation for a drunk. You know, there's I don't remember a lot of the details of any of the 2 years that I had that. I know that during the off season, I had to find another job, so I was a swamper on a trash truck. And that was, I mean, I really wasn't paid until I did get hired, but the thing was you'd get the pop bottles, you know, and you turn the pop bottles in and get beer and pork skins and hot sauce and all those goodies, and you keep all the stuff that you find in the trash. And I just thought, you know, I had other friends that were going off to college and they were getting married and they were getting careers and learning trades, and I just didn't want to do any of that. I was still celebrating, you know, graduating from high school, and I just really liked the party life. I mean, that's the only thing that I really had any interest in doing. So the old sidewalk cafe in San Clemente, gosh, this guy came down there one time and he wanted to sell me an Orange Bang machine. And I don't know if you ever seen that. It was kind of a low grade version of an Orange Julius. It had kind of an orange whip to it. And it was kind of a pricey investment. And I thought, you know, this is going to be all right. And you know what? It wasn't until I put vodka in it, like day number two, which was just absolutely terrible. I jump ahead just a minute. After I quit drinking, I went to college, and there in the canteen there, they had an Orange Bang machine. I said, man, you know, I'm going to try one of those, you know. And I paid my 50 cents or whatever that was, and I took one sip, and I almost threw it up. You know, it's like, oh, no, I'm not drinking this. But anyways, I'd met some friends at a party in Kansas, and I took off and back and forth and going to Tijuana and just all the parties. And, you know, there was other things that came. One time this guy comes up in the morning. You know, this was one of those refreshment stands. So there's a order window on the street, and you did your cooking or whatever you wanted, and you put the order out the side window, and then there was a patio seating out there. And this guy came up just as I was pulling out that front window. It must have been 10 o'clock in the morning thereabouts. And he said, do you ever get the shakes? And I said, yeah, we got shakes. We got chocolate, vanilla, pineapple, strawberry. And he says, no, do you ever get the shakes? And I kind of went through that thing again. And then he asked me for a third time. And I just turned my back and said something, you know, not too nice. But the thing was that he, you know, I don't know who he was, have no idea if he was, you know, some sort of a visitor there for a week and had observed me, or if he was a member of AA trying to carry the message or what that was, but I just completely blew that off. Another time a guy came down there, and I poured him a beer and set it out the window. He says, I'm not drinking today. And I said, what? And he says, I'm not drinking today. I said, well, here, just have a beer. He says, no, I'm not drinking today. And he said, when was the last time you went a day without drinking? And I couldn't remember, you know, and I didn't think about it at that time, but afterwards I thought, when was the last time I went a day without a drink? And I couldn't remember. What happened? I sold the hamburger stand. I took a brewery tour around the country, came back, and got a job selling bar supplies, man, and that was a dandy too, you know. So the guy that showed me the route was a drunk, and he said, we got in the van. Hey, do you mind if we stop by my house first? I said, no, we, you know, whatever. So we polished off a six-pack of Talls before we even got heading to where we needed to go. And he showed me the route for 2 weeks, and I was just, you know, it was a, that's the way I started that career. What happened to me was I was living in Dana Point. That's where I met Bob, somewhere along the line up there. And it was pretty heavy party day. That was still an unincorporated area of Orange County, and it wasn't patrolled very often, and they didn't fool around with the drunk kids too much. And the last summer that I was drinking was 1974. I was living in a friend of mine's backyard in a tent. I was selling those bar supplies, and I must have weighed 230, 40, 50. I don't even know how much I weighed. And I had a bad attitude and a foul mouth. And, you know, I remember getting off work one night and going over to, you know, guys that were my age. Most of them were doing drugs. And I dabbled in that too, kind of as a social, just because that's what they were doing. And here, Foster, try this type thing. And so I'd, you know, gobble something down. But this really wasn't my crowd. And they're sitting around this cable table smoking a bong. And this one guy says, well, you know, when I die, I want to die in a car accident, you know. And I'm, you know, and they go around someone else. So I want to have a heart attack and die. And it comes to me, you know, sharing like we do in AA. It comes around to my turn. And I said, you know what? I hope I drink myself into a coma, and I hope I go out tonight, you know. And it was kind of a ha-ha thing, but really I had nothing going on in my life. I was sick and tired of the same old rock and roll, sick and tired of the same old guys, sick and tired of the same old routine, but I could not get out of it. I didn't know how to do anything about that. So I wound up going to a concert in Anaheim, and I woke up the next morning up the street from the tent, and I was in the back seat of my car, and I didn't remember what happened the night before. And I got out of the back seat, and I got the car down the street, got, you know, cleaned up, and I went to work, and I had a couple beers, and I still couldn't remember what happened. And then I had a moment of clarity. Maybe I'm drinking too much. You know, and that was something. I didn't check my clock. You said I can go till 9:30? I tried to quit drinking on my own. And so I started not drinking during the week. And then the weekend came around. Okay, well, first of all, I wasn't going to drink at all. But then someone said, hey, you know, I got a phone call. Hey, there's a party tonight. And I said, I'm not going. I'm not drinking. Hey, come on. You know, so they'd call again. I'm not coming. I'm not drinking. But I'd show up, and then I'd say, okay, I'm not going to drink. But then I drank. And so then I thought, okay, I'm just going to drink on the weekends. I'll just drink on Saturday and Sunday. But then, you know, Friday, technically, you know, that's a weekend too. And then, you know, sometimes Monday morning, a little hair of the dog, you know, doesn't hurt. Well, and then Thanksgiving rolled around, and that just really screwed up my cycle and my plan, whatever I had. And I said, okay, here's the deal. I was telling myself, I'll go ahead and I'll drink through the holidays, but come January the 1st, I will never, ever touch another drop of alcohol again as long as I live. And I meant that. So on January the 1st, I was somewhere in Dana Point, I was at an apartment building that I didn't even, I still to this day have no idea where I was. And the days are pretty short that time of year, and the sun was still up, and I couldn't get up. I was just so drunk. And during that time when I was trying to quit drinking and then starting again, my body was starting to get rummy. It was like I didn't know if I was developing a wet brain. I didn't know if my body was all of a sudden having some sort of an intolerance because, you know, I'd get a pint of Seagram 7 and a, you know, six-pack of beer, and it just completely wiped me out. And then the next day I'd have a whole fifth of Old Charter and drink beer all day and didn't bother me at all. It's like, what's going on with this, you know? Well, come January, the incident on January the 1st, and I thought, well, maybe I really am an alcoholic, and, you know, maybe my life is, you know, maybe this is going to be my fate, and so what? You know, who cares if I drink myself to death in a coma? I mean, what does it really matter anyways? And so what happened was January the 26th, there was a wet T-shirt contest down in Dana Point Harbor, and I got cranked up, and I was still going on Tuesday, and I ran in. I stopped in Dana Point to see some buddies on my way up to do this bar supply route. So I had, it was inventory time, had to do half of Camp Pendleton and then go to El Toro. So I did the Marine Corps base. I had half of Camp Pendleton, the PXs and the enlisted club and whatever. Then I'd go up to El Toro and did the PX and the enlisted club and the staff and the officers club. And then I went over to LTA. Well, what happened was these guys were smoking dope in Dana Point and drinking these little cans of, the club, you know, the margaritas and I don't know what all they had. And anyway, I went down to the store and got a few of those myself. And then I ran into a buddy on the freeway. He goes like that, I go like that, and we stopped and at the old Leprechaun Lounge and had a few, and I proceeded to go to El Toro, and I took my orders on El Toro, and then I went over to the helicopter base, and then I thought, well, gosh, you know, I think I'll have a beer. And they didn't want me in the wherever club I stopped at, and I remember, the next thing I remember at the back gate, I was being stopped by the MPs, and someone was saying something about me and this and that. And, of course, my mouth was running, and so they called the MPs down, and I was handcuffed, and they took me down to the main gate, and my mouth was still going, you know, so they threw me in the cell, and I don't know, my mouth was still going, you know, and so they called the highway patrol, and there I was out there, you know, in front of everybody. I was walking the line at, you know, I don't know what time it was, 4:35 in the afternoon, something like that, and I'm going to Orange County Main Jail for my third drunk driving. And when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, they talked about getting a comparison date. When I woke up that morning, I didn't know where my car was. You know, I was going to lose my license, I was going to lose the job, and I was going to be in jail for a year. And I knew that just because I had a friend who had just been convicted of his third drunk driving, and that's exactly what happened to him. So that was a low point in my life right there. It's like, man, oh, man, what am I going to do? So they let me out that morning on my OR, and some guy felt sorry for me because, or I think he was laughing at me because there I was in my work clothes, you know, and being arrested, and I showed up late, and I had to fill those orders, man, from, you know, my handwriting from the day before. And anyways, I wound up going to see my attorney. And he says, man, there was a drunk driving program that had just started in Orange County, been around about a year, called the Lucky Deuce. And he said, you know, if you can quit drinking, this program could work for you. And I said, well, and he tell me a little bit. He said, if you think you can quit drinking. And I said, I can quit drinking. I said, I quit drinking for 3 months last fall. And that was nowhere near the truth, you know, at all. And so he says, you know, you're going to be turning your life over to Jesus. And I thought, oh, Jesus, I don't know. And so part of this deal on this Lucky Deuce was it was a 16-month program. And so you do the 30 days, and you get approved by the judge, you know, and you got to show up. And yeah, I'm the drunk, and I'm going to do all this stuff. And anyways, I signed up for this program. Part of it was going to two meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous a week and going to the judge's court school on alcoholism and doing all this kind of stuff. So anyway, I showed up at my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous on March 7th, 1975. And I was getting there early because I didn't want to be embarrassed. And there was two old guys that were there that were setting up the meeting. One of them was Eddie, and the other one was Jimmy. And Jimmy is the one that talked to me. And I'm so grateful that I saw the similarities and not the differences because, man, he was an old guy. He was probably like 72 or something. He didn't have any hair. He was wearing glasses, you know, he had hearing aids on and, you know, all that stuff. He probably had a radiologist and a cardiologist and a urologist and all the stuff that I got, too. But anyways, he told me about some of his drinking experience and how his wife had left him from, you know, because of his drinking. And actually, I had been engaged when I had that hamburger stand, but it was a real short engagement because it was either like, she was saying, it's like either me or the drinking. I said, well, I'll get back to you, you know. And then he said he'd been thrown out of college for being drunk. And I remember being suspended from San Clemente High School for being drunk on campus. The speaker that night was Judge John, you know, S from Malibu. And you know what? A judge, and here I am with a court card, right? So I said, okay, what? And the only thing I really remember about John, I mean, he looked sharp, you know, with a tie on and everything, and he was up there talking about his experience. And he says, you know, if you're, you got to take care of your number one problem, and everything else will take care of itself. And if you're a newcomer in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous tonight, your number one problem is probably alcohol. I remember that, and then next thing you know, I remember standing up and holding hands and saying the Lord's Prayer. And that was in March, and the windows were open, and the curtains were blowing. That was for you guys that have ever been to St. Clement's by the Sea in the fellowship hall there, you know, it was, anyways, I just thought, oh, man, you know, what did I get myself into here? But anyways, there was something about the people, something that was going on in that room that was just so new to me, and it was fresh, and I didn't know what it was. And I went to my second meeting that week was in Laguna Niguel, and the speaker that night was Dr. Paul O. And the next Saturday, I'm smoking dope all day with my buddies, right? Because the state of California has turned me into a drug addict. If I can't drink, you know, and I don't, you know what? The stipulation the judge was, you know, not to be around drugs. Well, marijuana is not really a drug, you know. And so I had rationalized this, and I show up at this meeting, and I'm pretty high, you know, and I'm sitting as far back in the corner at the old Canyon Club in Laguna. I'm sitting in the corner about as far back as I can get, and they had the candles going, you know, with the coffee pots and everything. And this gal comes up to me, and she said, why, Paul, it's so good to see you. We like to have the newcomers pour coffee. So, okay. Yeah. So I poured coffee, and my sponsor-to-be came over and got me out of that corner. He says, why don't you come sit at my table? And his name was Dave, Big Dave P, and his sponsor was Ray P. And those two guys saved my life. You know, both those guys, I don't know if they took me on as a team project or what it was, but I remember Ray saying to me after that meeting, he says, you know, kid, if you want to stay sober, there's a meeting in this room on Monday night at 8 o'clock. It starts at 8:30. If you want to stay sober, you'll be here at 8 o'clock. And I showed up at 8 o'clock. There I was. And then all of a sudden, after that meeting, he says, hey, if you want to stay sober, there's a meeting down at the Women's Club in Laguna Beach on Wednesday night. That meeting starts at 8:30. If you want to stay sober, you got to get to that meeting at 7:30. You get there at 7:30, you save that big table because that's where we sit. So anyway, I showed up. Yeah, I didn't know, you know, what to do or whatever. And then all of a sudden, it was Easter Sunday coming up, and it was a Saturday night meeting. These guys invited me to go to church. And it's like, what? I'm not going to church with you. And they said, well, why not? I said, well, the roof will fall in, you know. And these were Catholic, you know, Catholic guys. And I was not a Catholic, and I just thought, said, hey, this is a spiritual program. You know, if you want to stay sober, come. And then come over to our house. We're going to have a party, and you can just spend the day with us. So I showed up, and I did that. And that was a day that I asked Big Dave to be my sponsor. And he said, are you serious about staying sober? I said, yeah. He said, you willing to go to any lengths to stay sober? I said, yeah. He said, good, call me every night at 5 o'clock. I said, oh, no. You know, I made a mistake there. So anyways, that was quite a trial for me. You know, talk about anxiety and early sobriety. You know, what am I going to say to Dave? You know, what's he want to talk to me about, you know? And so anyway, I called him, and he's, hey, yeah, good to hear from you. We're going to the meeting tonight. I'll drive. I'll see you, you know, whatever. It wasn't a big deal, but those guys taught me a lot about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, going to the meetings and getting to the meetings early, going through the meetings and then staying to clean up and then going out to coffee afterwards, you know. And, I wasn't the most willing guy. I remember balking when Big Dave said to me, hey, what are you doing out here? I said, well, he said, get in there and wash the coffee cups. I said, you get in there and wash the coffee cups. Wrong answer, right? So he says, hey, look it, you said you were willing to go to any lengths to stay sober, and if you want to stay sober, you'll get in there and wash the coffee cups. And my sponsor told me to wash coffee cups, and I washed coffee cups when I was new, and I'm still sober. And then one time I got to drive the car, right? I'm going to drive these guys to a meeting. And, one of them says, boy, this is a dirty car. And my response is, oh, yeah, well, we're driving your car tomorrow night. And Ray says, no. There's a subtle message there. What that means is you need to clean your car. I said, oh, okay. And then Ray P. had a... he had a guy that he sponsored who was a hairdresser, and so they sent me to him, and I got cleaned up, you know. I said something to Ray after I'd been sober for a while. I said, how did you know I was a newcomer? He said, well, you were fat, bloated, dirty, unkempt, and you glowed in the dark. I said, oh, okay. So anyway, I took on service positions, you know, as they were assigned to me, and I got railroaded into a deal about being a secretary of this meeting in San Juan Capistrano that was starting. And Ray had been in the big war and had lost an eye. And I never knew which one was his good one and which one was his glass one, you know. And he's looking at me, he says, do you know what this means? And I'm thinking, no, but you're going to tell me, right? And he says, this is an AA commitment. Do you know what that means? And I'm thinking, no, but you're going to tell me, right? And he did. He said, what that means is you're going to be here every Friday night at 7:30 to open this building, and you're going to make the coffee, and you're going to set up the room, and you're going to stay during the meeting, and after the meeting, you're going to stay, and you're going to make sure that room is in better shape than when you got there, and the only excuse you have for not being there is if you die on the way. And he's looking at me at that with that one eye, you know, and I thought, okay. So anyways, I was also during that time, I should mention that I was lying about my sobriety date. So all of a sudden, because I told the judge that my sobriety date was like in February sometime, because I had to have 30 days of sobriety to be approved at court. Well, so I didn't tell him that I had a little slip, you know, in there. And so these guys were asking me, now, how long are you sober? I said, I'm sober 90 days. Good, you can lead the meeting. I thought, oh, okay. Or, hey, let's go. We're going to go talk. You can be the five-minute speaker. I said, okay. So anyways, they made a big deal about this, about getting a bumper sticker. And they wouldn't let me get a bumper sticker till I had 6 months, right? And I'm still lying about my sobriety date, and I got the bumper sticker. But by then, I was up to doing my my fourth step and my fifth step, and I took that fifth step, and I went home just like the book suggests, and I had a half an hour by myself, and you know what? It didn't take me a half hour, man. It was like split second. It's like God said, your sobriety date, man, you missed that. And so I was going fishing with Dave the next morning, and I said, hey, I missed something. It's a sobriety date, you know. And so I got clean on that. So my sobriety date is March 16th, 1975. You know, and I'm really grateful. I was 22 years old. There's so many stories that I have heard in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, probably hundreds of people that said, I went to my first AA meeting when I was 22 and I had a court card. But my story is I stayed in Alcoholics Anonymous. This was absolutely the best deal that I ever had in my life. And it was like I had another moment of clarity early on that, hey, here's an opportunity to change your life, and this opportunity may not come around again, and I better take advantage of it. You know, one of the things that it talks about, you know, in the book, you know, with the script is, you know, you tell a little bit about what it was like and what happened and what you're like now. And I am not the person that I came into Alcoholics Anonymous as. I mean, my life is just so much different, and thank God for that. And that, you know, that's because of the program. It's working the steps. It's the service work. It's what I learned from you people. It's, you know, and good and bad. You know, and sometimes I'd go to meetings with guys, or I'd run into them on the store, or see them on the freeway, and they're you know, it's like road rage, and oh yeah, I saw that guy leading the meeting last night at the, you know, so it's like I don't think he's got a good program, or so there's something missing there. So this higher power thing was something that I, like I told you, I was a little reluctant about that. My background is, you know, it's English and it's Protestant is what that is. And so my mom had taken me to church a few times, and I didn't understand the Episcopal Church and the stuff that went on there. I was a little reluctant. I remember my sponsor, I said, hey, you know, I'm having a little problem with this spiritual side of the program. And his wife was in the car at that time, and I was in the back seat, and she turned around and she said, you got a problem with the program because it's all spiritual. And so I became willing. Ray gave me a copy early on of the 24-hour day book, and he said, you need to read this book. And he'd written something nice in the fly leaf, you know, like, hey, if you read this book, it'll change your life and you won't have to drink again, or something like that. And then he quizzed me on it, you know, hey, did you read that 24-hour day book? I said, yeah. What did it say? And then another time, you know, well, I didn't read that book because you guys had me out till 11:30 last night drinking coffee, and I have to be to work at 7. You know what he said? Get up earlier, you know. And that's one of the things that has really helped my spiritual growth in the program is that quiet time. And that is one of the things that I still have today. I was sober probably a little over a year, and I ran into I saw a buddy that I used to go to parties with in high school. He was across the room at a Marie Callender's with a bunch of young kids, and there I am with all these old AA people over here at this other table. And I kind of waved at him, and he waved at me, and I ran into him that very next week. I hadn't seen him in 5 years, and I ran into him in a parking lot at a bank. And he says, you know, I saw you the other night. He said, there's something different about you. What happened? And I said, well, I quit drinking, and I joined Alcoholics Anonymous. And he said, wow. And I said, so Homer, what the hell are you doing? And he says, well, I'm the youth pastor at the Christian Mission Church. And so he invited me to go to church, you know, and that was something that was a big turning point in my life right there. I mean, it took courage to do that, and it opened up some new doors for me. What happened was Dave and Ray and a couple other AA guys got a hold of me and started talking to me, you know, when I was sober 6 or 8 months about going back to school. And I thought, why would I want to do that? And I found out I was on commission, by the way, by that time. All of a sudden, I get a paycheck that's a little bit bigger, and by then, I'm almost working an honest program. So I go into the office, and I say, hey, I think you made a mistake on my paycheck. Just, oh, no, no. This is how much you sold right here. I was on commission for the 2 years that I worked there, and my paycheck was the same every time because I never made above the base salary, right? So why would I want to go to school, man? Everything's going, well, hey, selling bar supplies is a great occupation for a drunk. But, you know, AA should put you back into the mainstream of life, and you should think about something else you want to do. And so anyways, Father Dave was one of those guys. He was a CPA. And I remember going over to his house and standing in his backyard. And he said, isn't this beautiful? And I looked out there and said, yeah, it looks like a backyard, you know. Or it was a canyon there. He said, listen to those birds. I said, yeah, yeah. Listen to those. He said, isn't this great? I said, yeah, yeah, it is. And he said, and we have a right to be here. We're a part of life. Isn't this wonderful? And I just said, yeah, yeah. You know, I didn't quite connect all the dots at that time. But anyways, Father Dave was instrumental, and so was John F., who was he worked at the community college, and I started going back to school, and there were a lot of alcoholics there. And graduated from the community college on the 7-year plan. And I met Kim that summer. She was working. She just graduated from college, and her roommate was working there at the sport fishing office. I quit drinking. I'd been 86th off all the boats, and I showed up down there one day and just kind of walking by, and the manager came out and says, hey, Paul, how you doing? Would you like a job for this summer? Of course, everybody knew I'd quit drinking because word spread quickly in that little town. So anyway, that's where I met Kim, and last week we celebrated 44 years, and our wedding was quite a big deal too, because Father Dave was the priest, and my best man was there, and I had some of my drinking buddies there, and it was just a grand occasion. And Father Dave invited everyone to have communion, and Kim's mother and older sister, I thought, yeah. It was an interesting day. Anyways, and you know what? We've had a good life. I think a lot of that success in our marriage is I took the principles of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous into that relationship. And we're honest with each other, and we love each other, and we care for each other. And we've got four kids, and I became the breadwinner, and Kim raised the kids, and they turned out just great. And my life. What time is it? Is this thing? We've moved around the country quite a bit, and some of that has been good. I think it's been good for me because it strengthened my program, if nothing else, because you show up in a new city and you don't know anybody, and all of a sudden, here you are. That's why I'm here tonight, by the way. They let the local guy speak on Friday night, you know, and I've been a resident of Yuma full-time for 2 years, so here I am, you know, right? But anyways... we moved here from Washington State. We've been in Kansas 3 different times and in Colorado and in Nebraska and around like that. And we've had some real good experiences with the family. I've had some interesting experiences in Alcoholics Anonymous. I got to Great Bend, Kansas, I became the alternate GSR of the Rebel Group, and Next thing you know, the DCM is being, he was killed in a car accident, and I went from alternate GSR to DCM overnight. And next, you know, hey, we got to get our own phone because the phone went into the old club and this and that. And there's a lot of stuff that happened back in Great Bend. We're just absolutely phenomenal stories that I really don't have time to talk about tonight. I'll tell you one, okay? So I get the other groups in the district agree to subsidize this 24-hour answering service, right? And so I get a phone call at, you know, like 10 o'clock at night on a Sunday. And I call a couple guys. Nobody's, I'm not going. I got to go to work. So I go to this drunk's trailer at, you know, in the middle of the night on a Sunday night. And that's when the phone company was tearing up AT&T. And he had been out in Garden City, you know, which is like 120-something miles west. And he tore all the phone system out on a Friday, right? And there he is drunk in his trailer Sunday night. And so anyways, I stayed sober through that. And then it was, I don't know when it was after that, I get a phone call on a Sunday morning from the hospital. And here's this guy, Keith, and they're trying to get him in a straitjacket, you know? And there were three nurses there, and he sees me, and he lunges off the table at me, and we wound up calling the Barton County Sheriff. And so Bob agrees to run him down to a Larned State Hospital, and I was in the Barton County Sheriff's car with the deputy in the front seat with Keith in a straitjacket in the back, going 90 miles an hour through Pawnee Rock with the lights going. I said, man, this is bitching, you know? And then we get down to Larned State Hospital, and Keith won't sign the papers, and the deputy's trying to get the pen in his mouth. He's spitting the pen out. Oh, boy. Anyways, you know, the theme of this conference is acceptance. And a lot of that acceptance for me was just accepting the fact that I was an alcoholic and accepting the fact that I need a higher power in my life and accepting the fact that this is a, you know, it's a disease that I'm going to have for the rest of my life. I got to pay attention to this thing. I believe I have recovered from that seemingly hopeless state of mind, but I do believe that, you know, if I decide to go back to drinking, it could not be good. So, this last year has been an interesting year for me because this has been a year for acceptance. It's a little over a year ago that a dear friend of mine, old Tom, who was here several years ago, the year when there was no, it was so cold and they couldn't get the heat on because they hadn't had the heat on here for 3 years or something and they something didn't work. Anyways, Tom died. And we were really good friends, and that kind of threw me off. And then someone asked me to be a service sponsor, and you know that's an honor to be asked to do that. But it had been a long time since I've been through that service manual, and I don't know if any of you have seen the new service manual, but oh my goodness, what a mess they made of that! I mean, it's really pretty. You know, you go see Appendix A for more information. You go to Appendix A for more information. See Appendix M, and then you get some more information. It's not. It's just really. Anyways, then all of a sudden, you know, they're having this pre-conference, and they got this 151-page document coming out of all the group's opinions, you know, and what they think about changing the words in the big book and about, it wasn't so much that, it was a plain language big book. One of the things, that's been discussed for a long time, but the members' eye view of Alcoholics Anonymous, that got my attention. That is my favorite pamphlet, and somewhere they said that was irrelevant. Irrelevant? To what? Does that mean I'm irrelevant? Because it's describing Alcoholics Anonymous in Southern California in 1969. It's like, what does that make me? And I just didn't understand that. And the more I started looking into what's going on, in AA back in New York, my whole life just was like unraveling. It's like, what is going on? I felt betrayed by a lover or best friend, or like, I didn't think that these principles could change. I thought the groups ran this outfit. What is going on with this? And then I had two guys that gave me the conference report from this last General Service Conference in April last year. And so I read a lot of that, and it's like they've got 100 employees back there, and they've got assistants that have assistants, and they're outsourcing a lot of stuff. And it's like, what is going on? And then, the plain language big book, and they're leaving out some chapters, and now they want to change the language of the co-founders, and I don't know. They aren't specific with what language are they going to change. I mean, is it just wording in the big book, or are you going to rewrite AA Comes of Age or Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers? I don't know what that means. So, and then I had another friend die at the end of the year. It's like, man, oh, man. So, you know, God's been working on me. I've been working on acceptance. Coming here today, it was a blessing starting right out just by hearing, a young lady that was sober just over a year, to just tell me that this program really works. I'm standing out in the lobby today, recognize a guy from a year ago. He was a newcomer last year, and he's a year sober. And, this program still works. So it's the principles of the program that I try to practice in my daily affairs is what, has changed my life and keeps this thing fresh. I know when my program starts to slip. And they told me that my program doesn't have to stagnate. And if my program starts to slip, it's up to me. I kind of went to any lengths this year. I changed home groups. I went to different meetings. I called my sponsor this year. I've done some things to try to, in my head, just wrap my head about, where is my, what is my role in Alcoholics Anonymous as an elder statesman, am I an elder statesman or am I a bleeding deacon, maybe it's just hard for me to realize that I've got to sit in the back row here and let somebody else row the boat, and that's the way this thing was designed to do. So, I like the history. I know there's some history buffs here today, so I really like Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. I hope that doesn't change. That really describes a lot about how this program started. I start every morning with quiet time, and just to have a little bit of, the morning watch. I read an inspirational book, and I try to do that two-way prayer, where I'm asking God some questions, and I'm looking for answers, and, it's just, it's a wonderful program that we've got. I don't know if there's anybody new here today, but if you are newer to the program or you're coming back again, please stay with us because this is the best deal you're going to have. And Dr. Bob was just so straightforward in what he said, and he liked to keep things simple. He said, trust God, clean house, and help others. And he said, your heavenly Father will never let you down. So thank you so much. God bless you.